someone walks up and they try to hand me a tab of acid. I thought I was good. I was cured. You know, I went through the program. I'm never going to use it again. 3 months out of being back up here, I relapsed, whatever, you know.
And you're only cured if you go to Passages.
So the guy gives me one, and I'm like, well, I never really had a problem with acid, you know. And I really think that this is soul cleansing, you know. Like, this is going to give me a spiritual experience. It'll be all right, you know. Like,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Most High Show. I'm your host, Reverend Christian Mystic Jansen. And today, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I have no idea. I have a feeling it's going to get interesting. I feel like we're going to get deep. But I think we're also, there's going to be a little bit of the sacred and the profane. Just letting you know, this is the Most High Show. Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show. So with me today, tonight, on the show, we got Mira in the building. We got friend Will in the building. Kale is on the ones and twos. Leslie's doing, we're going to have to break that down later, Kale. Leslie's doing some quality control briefly. Unless she's going to a movie.
Oh, that's nice of her.
And you're listening. And that's the way it is. And so we're going to talk a little bit of recovery. So this is Will and Mira and I know each other, but this is our first time meeting Will. Will has been vouched by Kale.
Really?
Which tells you a little bit. But why don't you just give us a little introduction about you and what prompted you to say, yeah, I'll come do this Most High Show. Sounds cool.
Oh, what prompts me is a debt that I owe to the creator, I guess. I believe that I'm sober today because of spiritual intervention. And I chose a different way for my life. And when I got the opportunity to make a change and I decided I wanted to live clean and sober, I then got into spiritual debt.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm asked to do anything in association with recovery or AA, I know that I'm required, I think, to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So you got suckered into it then,
pretty much. Yeah. I mean,
that's right.
But I like, you know, I guess I like that term spiritual debt, but I also don't like the spiritual debt concept.
I understand.
I think I understand what you mean by it, which is the appropriate response to the quote unquote grace that's been given.
Right.
Would that be?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I may take it to another level on you know, the wording.
Yeah.
But I'd also, you know, every time, whether, you know, I want to in the moment, I always get a reward after. You know, I always find that I have a new experience and it's not as awful as my mind tells me it's going to be. And, you know, and yeah. I don't miss out on anything. I gain more than anything. You know?
So. Yeah. There ain't nothing I do that I want to do. And then I do it and I go, oh, I'm glad I did that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Right. You're like, oh, it's all making sense. Okay. Yeah. I'm supposed to.
So you're in recovery, Will. What you want to share, like, what your clean date is? And
April the 8th, 2014.
Oh, okay.
It was the last time I used.
Nice.
I was arrested that day, but I hadn't used that day, but I mean, it was lingering effects were going on, and it was pretty bad. I mean, I can go into more detail about it.
Well, that's actually the first question for all of us. Is the last time you remember the last time you got high? So, as much as you feel comfortable sharing in the multiverse, you go for it.
Well, I made the front page. There was my picture in the Troop County flyer or whatever. I was Waffle House gunman.
What?
I'd been up for days on amphetamines, and I was on Suboxone coming off of heroin, and I locked myself in a Waffle House bathroom. The police thought I had a gun. I had a flare gun with no ammunition. I thought the police were someone trying to rob me, and I had like a bag of papers and a flare gun and really nothing, you know. I don't know what they were going to rob me, but I did have some drugs, I guess. So I don't know. I didn't want them to take my drugs. Anyway, I ended up in jail. I didn't get arrested. I got rescued. I stayed there for 3 months. There was a bunch of God shots happening. You know, I guess that happens to a lot of people in jail. I went to, from there, I got sentenced to 3 months in a time served, I guess. I did my 3 months. I got 3 years probation. And when I got released, my journey began, my sobriety. Yeah. Because that's where this has happened to me plenty of times. You know, I've came into AA at 16, and I get sober till I was 36. So I was in and out of the rooms, but I didn't do anything. You know, I just came and I saw that people were getting sober, and I thought, well, if I come to meetings, I can do what they're doing. I don't need their help,
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they're anything like me, I don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just come here and I'll do this thing. And that didn't work for 20 years, you know? And so this time when I, got to AA, I asked for help. But that was difficult to, ask another man to help me to do anything. You know?
Yeah.
I figure I can do whatever anybody else can do.
Right.
And I'm glad I did. It's probably one of the greatest things I ever did. Life.
Yeah. Well, something definitely shifted. So congratulations for making that choice. And so you had the flare gun like it was a gun.
At a Waffle House.
Yeah. I feel like this is the beginning of a Lil Wayne song. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And then you were in the bathroom, locked yourself in the bathroom. So you were up
but
on
it was a there was a 8-hour standoff. The SWAT team was there. It was a pretty big deal.
But now you're not in your right mind because you've been up for days, so you're right. Hallucinating things. You're not really in touch with whatever reality is.
Right? No, they put me in a rubber room in a turtle suit for 9 days after that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I
was out of it.
This is the thing about meth, right? Like, and I've been talking to another guy that comes on our show sometimes, David, and he's a counselor. And just the effects of anytime I work with anyone who's like had extensive periods of meth use, had those long, the lingering effects of what it does to your mind, it's really troubling, right? Like, right. I mean, not only while you're on it and while you're up in those like psychosis states, but even afterwards, once you get sober, right. It takes a long time for your brain to reorient and get back to homeostasis, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 9 years. I've just had celebrated 9 years, and I'm still paranoid. I don't know. I did a lot of cocaine in Florida before I got up here, and I was introduced to meth in Georgia, probably like, I don't know, a few years back. I mean, I'd probably done it here and there, but, it didn't get heavy until this last time. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of things, you know. Like, I mean, I had twitches in my toes where I would focus. I'd twitch my toes, and I noticed that a couple years into being sober, you know, where I would get real focused, and I'd start doing these little twitches, you know. But, I mean, I think recognizing it. Asmira
twitches over here in her seat.
Admitting it, you know, talking about it with other people and knowing that I'm not alone. Yeah. In it, you know, so, you know, it's a great question because, you know, you feel like you're, you know, there's something wrong with you, you know, like, yeah. I mean, there is, but you're not, you know, there's definitely something wrong with me, you know, mentally, I've got some issues, you know, right. Like, I'm in a relationship now and, you know, the only problem in that relationship is me. You know, it's like the best relationship I've ever been in. But like, you know, I'll revert back to my old think I see something from the past happening now. And it's, I get weird, you know, and most of the time it's to do with exhaustion, not eating right or not drinking enough water, you know, the Holt thing.
Yeah.
Like that. I think that's a huge part of inventory that gets kind of glazed over. You know, we want to do a written inventory, but like inventory to me is like a constant, you know, like breathing, you know, you took a deep breath before that and she's breathing now, you know, like remembering to remain calm. You know, like,
well, I had that the other day. Actually, I was really tired and I'm walking around and my mind is doing like, it's either, I can't remember if it's doing self-pity or anger. It was just twisting everything and every thought was getting twisted. And I had to keep telling myself, dude, you're tired. So you're going to go to bed soon. So don't believe the hype, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
You gotta go take a nap and then we'll come back.
Yeah, and come back after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Or have a snack and a nap.
Have a snack and a nap. So Mira, same question for you, which is like, when was the last, do you remember the last time you got high? So first off, what's your sobriety date?
So my clean date is June 9th, 2020.
Clean date.
Clean date.
For all the Bonnies listening.
For Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah. Clean data. Say it again, because I was caught up on the...
the tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
June 9th, 2020.
All right. Yeah. Oh, right in the middle of COVID.
What? I'm sorry?
Right in the middle of COVID.
Right in the middle of COVID. Yeah. I actually didn't even know COVID was going on. Because I don't think that when you're using, you really watch the news too much. I was like, why are all these people wearing masks? This is crazy. Yeah. I'm like, oh.
You had a different experience of the pandemic.
But everybody, when we were out using, everybody's like, oh, I feel like we're not getting COVID because we're getting high right now.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I remember the last time. I'll never forget it. Because right after, you know, I was so proud of myself. I remember telling my mom, like, Mom, I'm not smoking crack anymore. I'm only doing Molly. Oh. And I thought that was a big accomplishment, you know? Yeah. And looking back, I realized how insane my thinking was because, you know, that was just, I was thinking that I'm doing better since I'm not on, you know?
Well, technically it is kind of a step up, you know? But
well, not in their eyes. They're like, oh, okay, great job. Let's give you the slow clap, you know?
Right, right. That's like when like a heroin addict is just drinking.
Just drinking. Yeah. Or taking what is
I'm
that?
I'm just drinking and smoking weed now. I'm sober.
California clean.
Right, yeah. So you had switched to, you were just doing Molly.
Just doing Molly, yeah.
And do you remember what that last
somehow I made it up to Georgia and I was in a hotel. And it was, you know, one of those really nice hotels. No, it was it was super sketchy, and I don't know, you know, it was pretty bad situation. But the cops came in, another SWAT situation, kind of like SWAT, not quite, you know. But and then I remember just like having a mixed feelings. Like I'm glad that I'm going to jail, but I'm also, you know, wish I could have gotten, you know, one last one before they arrested me. You know.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like that whole thing. But, you know, once I got into jail and I just slept it off, I was like, okay, I started feeling better. Like, it took some time for the clouds to lift from my head, you know, because I was just in such a drug-induced coma, you know, just operating at whatever the next high was. And, you know, already having been in recovery before, it was, I knew how this was going to end.
Yeah.
You know, you just hope that it doesn't end that day.
Right.
You know, until you get clean, and then you realize, okay, thank God, you know. And I knew that no matter what, I was going to get out eventually. So, I wasn't even, you know, I was just like, okay, what's next? You know, and, you know, I'll never forget that. That was like one of the scariest moments, but the most relieving in the same sense, you know?
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Well, kind of like what Will said, he said, I got rescued. I got arrested. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've been doing this since 2007.
Yeah.
In and out, doing this way, not doing this, adding this in, you know, doing my own program. Right. Even though everybody told me what I needed to do, you know, and suggestions and all these things. And, you know, each time I learned a lesson from things I was supposed to do and that I didn't do, you know.
So. I thought I cracked the code when I was doing cocaine at night and Adderall during the day. I was like, oh, crap, I figured it out. Now I know how to work and party consistently, nonstop at the same time.
Right, because, you know, Adderall is perfect.
Yeah.
No one really knows.
I could hear people at the office, they were going, what's wrong with Christian?
You're like, are they talking about me or is that the psychosis?
No, I'm pretty sure they were talking about me. Yeah, but it did go into.
It did go, yeah.
So the same thing kind of for you. So you were locked up, which gave you that separation from the substance. Gave you a little bit of clarity.
Yeah, it did. And it was, you know, and I knew like, okay, this is where it starts. So.
And how long were you in jail for?
I was in jail this last time about almost four months.
Okay.
So, and that was up here in Gwinnett County.
Yeah.
And I'm really grateful to one of the inmates, one of the other girls who was like, you know, because we're all in county together and you're amongst a bunch of sickness, you know, not too many people are like, all right, well, thank God we started this process. I've been rescued. You know, they're not everybody has that mindset. They're like, all right, I'll let you know how I scam this place or how to steal from this store, you know, or whatever your thing was, you're going to get some pointers. It's like a workshop, you know? Yeah. You're like, all right, we're about to, you know, do this a lot better when we get out, you know, and so you can get wrapped up in that because you're so early in recovery, your brain isn't really, you know, you can think a certain way and you're like, okay, I'm glad that I've been rescued. But if you're surrounded by a bunch of sickness, for me anyways, I started to see myself getting sucked back into that. And so I'm like, you know, almost taking notes. And then one of the other inmates said to me, she says, hey, there's this program called GRIP inside of Gwinnett, inside of the jail. Let's sign up for it and see if we can get in. Mm. And so I did. And then a week later, they took us over into that program. And it was, it was the best.
It was like a rehabilitation.
Yeah. It was. There was no massages on Wednesday or personal chefs. But it had, you know, a set structured schedule. We were all assigned a job. So you didn't get to choose your job. They gave it to you. You know, we had that all day, and then at night we came back and we had classes, different ones on meditation and recovery and anger management and, you know, Zumba, you know, different stuff. We had the garden.
Talk about like a higher power thing, right? Yeah. Like this one person in the sea of, you know, chaos goes, hey, let's do this thing. Yeah.
And
then and whatever grace is in you to go, okay. Right, because you could have said nah.
No,
right.
I'm just gonna sit here and chill with him.
Yeah. But you have a pretty cool story about when you got released. You mind just sharing that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. And then cut me off when it's, you know, I've gone too far. But So when I was in jail, you know, I knew that instantly. It didn't matter where I was, I needed to get a sponsor, and I picked a lady and we started working through the steps. She had like maybe 4 months more than me, you know, whatever. I didn't care. You know, her name was Rhonda O'Neely, you know, and I'm still in contact with her today. But we went over the steps and then, you know, the girls would tell me, listen, because I don't know Georgia. I was in Florida. They're like, oh, yeah, the meeting's about 15 minutes down the road, you know. And I knew from all my prior experiences that once you leave from an institution of any kind, you need to go to a meeting right away. So I was like, all right. So when I get out, I'll walk to the meeting, blah, 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 you know, and and so I was sentenced to 1 year work release or a program. I asked the courts to give me a program. Please give me a program. And so So I was hoping that that was going to work out, but none of that worked out. When I was walking out, Deputy Wilson handed me a number. It was almost like slow motion, like, you know, you know, here's the number, call it. And I'm like, all right. So they just released me to the streets of Georgia. And still being like 3.5 months clean, you know, you're... I just remember somebody else told me before, like, just don't bite the bait. Just don't bite the bait. And I walked out, and I walked to the gas station right down the road from the jail. You know, I had a choice of what phone call to make, and I still was not sure. But I knew, okay, let's just stay on course. I called the program. I did my pre-assessment on the phone. The team came and picked me up, and I said, listen, I got to go to a meeting. And I didn't have a phone or anything, and I asked the clerk there. I said, listen, I'm trying to get to the Gwinnett room. Can you write down the, you know, can I write down the directions? And so, yeah, I mean, by car it's 15 minutes, but by walking it's like 2 hours. So yeah. I just remember walking out of there and just following these directions. And I was like, I had my little brown bag and, you know, look fresh out of jail. And, you know, and
what a moment for you.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was, you know, I made it there, you know, and then the team and I sat down in the meeting. I told them that I just got out of jail and the program shortly after that came and picked me up.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, it could have gone so many different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think of that as like, as the grace of God. There's like a theological word for it called common grace is what some people would call it. Right. Which is this thing that whatever God is, right, is working through very means that we're not conscious or cognitive of. Right. So the fact that we're all here sitting with the ability to think and breathe and listen and hear, we're all experiencing this quote unquote common grace. Right. Don't get too attached to the words. They're just words. But that you were experiencing this because it's almost like that moment of, OK, I got two people to call. Right.
Right.
You know, like, and to have the willingness to pick up the treatment number. Right.
Right.
That's a really pivotal. I mean, like that's where the, if it was a movie, you know what I mean? That's when the violins are playing and it's like, you know, and it's like you pick up the phone and then the screen goes blank.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And you got to wait around till the next episode for to figure out who you called. Yeah.
To be continued.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like there's huge like the outcomes are completely different, you know, with.
Yeah.
And even though, and that's why, like, when I see people that are early in recovery, like 3.5 months or at the same time, I look back at me and I say, like, there's no way that I could have at 3.5 months went back home to the area where I was using and, you know, and think that I would be okay. You know, it was just... Even still, you know, having not even knowing the area didn't really matter. You know, it's just I had to make the right choice so that I can get this opportunity. You know.
Yeah. So both of you, I guess, talked about how you kind of up until this kind of canon moment in your lives, you know, made this commitment and there was this change, but you were in and out, right? So some people might call that the relapse. What was your experience of relapse? I feel like we don't talk about it enough, you know? I feel like it's kind of like a taboo thing, you know? But I think a lot of people experience it. So how would you describe your personal experience, Will, with this term relapse?
Yeah. So, I mean, I hear stuff in meetings, you know, where it's like, well, if you really got sober, you know, there's no relapse, but that's what I would call it it was just like, you know, it's different every time, I guess, you know, but one of my sponsors explained it best, I think, with, I don't want to bump this thing. So I'm like, yeah, but, so, you know, It's not hard for me to stop, you know, like, I had to be separated usually by jail or something like that. You know, something would happen. And I didn't understand, I could get on board with the allergy of the body. Once I put it in my body, I don't stop until they cut me off or, you know, I run out of money or, you know, and I'll just hustle some more, but whatever. I understood that. So yeah, I'm an alcoholic, but like the other part of the obsession of the mind and the way that my sponsor put it, he was like, you know, life starts to happen and inside of me, there's a spring. And when someone does something that I don't like or something doesn't turn out the way I want it to, the spring gets tighter.
Oh.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And then another, you know, and I don't address it. I just move on, you know. But it's there.
Yeah. Me and Mira both just, and like it just felt our spring tightened up.
Yeah.
Because, right. Exactly it. That's it. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's still the same thing today.
Right.
You know, like. It's a lot easier for me to get unwound at this point in because I've been, you know, practicing. I'm just like, I don't really like pain, you know, and that's painful to live that way. You know, it's exhausting, you know, but, you know, in early sobriety and I would feel better, you know, money start coming in, you know, and I'd say I'm, you know, if anybody asked me, I'm never going to use again, you know, but I didn't have a spiritual awakening. I didn't have a fellowship. I didn't have any support, you know. I thought I had support because, you know, people were like, yeah, go Will, you know, stay sober. But that's not really, you know, I mean, really support is people that I'm honest with and that people that are honest with me, you know. Like, those are the people that keep me sober, other people, you know. I mean, you know, my family can be supportive, but they're not. They're not like me, so they don't know.
Yeah.
And the only person that can help me is someone else that knows, you know. I believe that. And so, yeah, that's just what happened every time, you know. And the only solution I have to unwind it before the program is to use, you know. It instantly unwinds it.
Yeah.
None of my problems go away. Nothing's resolved, you know, as soon as it wears off. I'm just as tight as I was when I got
it, but it, and maybe it doesn't even unwind it. It just gives you the ability to ignore it or whatever.
Yeah.
A mental reprieve. You know,
yeah. Something.
Right. Yeah. It's like Novocaine on your tooth. The infection's still there. You just can't feel it no more.
Can't feel it.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Numb.
Well, I like that explanation.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, Hank, was on the show once and he said, we talked about relapse a little bit, and he said he didn't even count his starts and stops as relapses because he was like, I never really started.
Mm.
Right. You know, I never really truly gave myself to the program, so I never counted that I was ever in recovery, you know, which I felt like, oh, that's a really good way to look at it,
right.
You know. But you said you had some time and then decided to go back to life. What's your experience with relapse, Mira?
Well, I mean, it's you know, I've had a year, I've had 3 years, and the common denominator really has just been I've just stopped going to meetings, stopped doing the things that I used to do that sustain my recovery, you know. You know, so that's been with both times, you know. I would be very active and involved in my recovery process, and then just slowly but surely. It didn't happen right away. It was like, you know, it was just little things. Now looking back, I know the signs, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but just stop going to meetings. That's why it's so huge. I make sure that I go to meetings all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
And I, just because I know you, and you say go to meetings, but I went to a meeting. I went to a meeting with her in Miami, my first time in Miami. I go to this meeting, and I don't know, there's like 50 people there. Every person gives me a hug. Everyone's like, knows my name by the end of the meeting.
Right.
So this is not just I go to a meeting. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
She's getting integrated into a culture and into a family of all these people who I saw a couple months later, and it was like I had that same feeling again. Like, oh, here you are again. So you're saying go to a meeting, but you're really, I think, knowing you, you know, you're you're talking about being in this community.
Being in community, finding your, like my sponsor says, finding your tribe.
Yeah.
You know, people that get you, that, you know, that you can talk about anything with. Yeah. You know, I mean, I feel that I'm very fortunate now, because if I didn't find it in the area that I was in, I'm go to a whole different area. You know, that doesn't mean that I don't go to meetings where I live, but I just needed, I didn't want to get complacent. I didn't want to, you know, lose that feeling of like the love that I have for recovery and how grateful I am for, you know, it's saving my life, you know? And so I just knew that I just needed to have that change, you know? And so, and it's not just about going to a meeting. It's like sharing when things are good, sharing when things are bad, and not even worrying about, you know, how it's going to make me look. I just need to talk about what's going on in my brain and the things that I'm doing to cope with my trauma, my, you know, or life stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And
you just let it rip.
Let it rip. I have to, because
no, I'm not doing that though. My brain is like formulating before I share. I've gone through 7 different iterations of it, and I try to tell myself, dude, stop doing that.
Right.
Like, listen to the people in the room.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's when I just don't even share on days like that, because I'm like, this ain't even me. Right. It's just my magnificent mind wanting to. I got something to say about this. You know,
I know. I kind of check myself before, like, am I sharing to hear myself, or do I need to share? So,
right.
And if it's just sharing to hear myself, I'll just kind of like, I'll call my sponsee family or something, and we'll have like a group. We have a group chat, and we all kind of just kind of let it go. But you know, I mean, I think the biggest part is learning how to have fun, you know, clean, and not just the meetings, but getting involved in, you know, what, you know, the conventions and going out to eat afterwards, or just going to hang with people. And so it's easier for me to have my support, my network. Like, if I'm able to talk to them about the good stuff, then it'll be easier for me to talk about the stuff that's not so pleasant.
Yeah.
You know, and just not be afraid.
Well, that brings up for me, it's not on our list of questions, but you guys didn't look at them anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I did, sir. I did.
But it's this idea of what they call outside issues, right? Mm. And the longer I've stayed sober, the more I realize, or at least this is my realization, there are no outside issues. Because if I don't know how to manage my emotions and my mental state, right? And whatever the thing is, be it my relationship with my wife or my money situation or my status in a social club or something like that. You know what I mean? If I don't know how to regulate and manage that, that will lead me to the place where I'll start going, you know what, I think I would drink or a drug sounds good, right? So this idea of like, and I think for many years in recovery, the way I utilized the sponsor was I was like categorizing things. And I would go, well, that's not drug alcohol related. Right. So I'm not going to bring that up. Right. You know what I mean? You know, that has nothing to do with craving. So I'm not going to bring that up.
I don't want to smoke crack. I'm not telling them.
Yeah, I'm not. But if it was here, you know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So it's like I was missing this whole piece of the program, or the not. And now I would say program. I feel like that's such a small word for what it really is. But like these sacred relationships, because I wasn't being fully authentic. And I've shared this before many times, which is a buddy of mine, Mitchell. He kind of came into my life, and so he's just wide open, you know. Kale's laughing because he knows him. so Mitchell's wide open, and much like you, Mira, you know, and is it, he just, whatever's going on, you know.
Right.
And that started to teach me, like, oh, I can be, because he wasn't saying anything I wasn't thinking.
Right.
He was just saying it out loud, which suddenly just gave me permission to be me a little bit. You know what
Isn't
I'm saying?
Cool?
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys have any experience with that kind of stuff, or what about you, Will?
Yeah. I just, when you said it, when you brought up the topic, I thought about it. It's in a reading. Kale comes with me and we do a H&I meeting, and it's in the reading. And I said, if you know, these people are new, a lot of them don't have any experience, you know, they're just into detox, you know, and some of them have been through a few times, But it said, you know, that same line, you know, if you start sharing on something outside of the topic or not related to your recovery, and I'm like, well, what is that? I said it out loud, you know, I'm like, well, what is not related to your recovery? Right. Because, you know, like we're talking about, you know, it's life that, you know, once you get the drugs out of there, you know, now you're just dealing with, you know, yourself and life.
Yeah.
And it's the way that an addict processes things. You know, we have skewed perception of reality. And then we think we know what's going on. And if we don't bounce that off of somebody else, or at least say it out loud, you know, you don't even necessarily need to get feedback. You know, a lot of times, you know, guys call me that I've been sponsoring for years. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't really, you know, if I have experience, I'll give them my experience. But I don't have any advice for you. Because first off, I don't really care to waste my breath. They're going to do what they're going to do. You know, like I mean, like, do you really want to know what I had? You know, because you're not going to do that, you know. Like, oh, I'm leaving her this time. And I'm like, yeah, right, okay.
So I just told what happened to you when you did that, and then, you know, kind of weigh the odds.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, but I'm here, and make sure you talk to somebody else about it too, you know, like, keep talking about it. I'll say that repetitively, you know, like a broken record, because I know that that's what gave me, you know. I didn't want to touch on something that you guys were talking about with the meetings, though, like find a new meeting. Because that was another thing in the beginning, was I would go to these meetings with, and I'm an old guy now, you know, I'm a grandpa. But I would go to these meetings, and they'd smoke cigarettes, and it was just a bunch of old people, and then they'd ambush me on the way out, you know. And I just, they weren't my people, man. Like, I didn't feel like going there. I went there to get my sheet signed. As soon as I figured out I could sign my own sheet, you all were anonymous, I never went back, you know. But I missed out on a lot, you know. Like, there's young people's meetings all around Atlanta, and these people do all kinds of stuff, you know. And, and, you know, now I'm from Florida as well, and I've got a whole fellowship of people, you know, they've come up here, and we've stayed in Airbnbs and done stuff all around Atlanta. And then I go down there, and then, I got asked to, DL a meeting Thanksgiving when I go to Maryland for the family reunion. Like, it's just like, you know, I got real friends now, you know, and like,
yeah,
I'm getting off on the topic. Am I?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
I don't think so either. Like, I'm listening.
Yeah.
Like,
what, no, saying? Because that real friends thing brought me, you know, there's somebody that I'm working with now, and I'm like, this guy don't know how to have a friend. And I'm like, the reason why I can see it is because I was exactly like that. You know what I mean? Like, all, and literature talks about this. Well, that we relate to people in one of two ways. We're either like overbearing,
right,
or we're completely subservient to them. We have no idea how to relate to other humans. Right. And so much of what I think recovery is this learning how to relate to each other and be a friend and let someone be a friend to you. That's like, that's very foreign. You know what I mean? Especially when everyone is just a means to an end up until...
We were so used to out on the, you know, in that lifestyle, it's like a get or get got, you know. There's no, like, value in much of anything, let alone a relationship with another person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the people get a little frustrated when they see, like, you know, oh, this person did this. Well, it's, you know, you can, and when you have a good program or you know, you just learn through your mistakes, you know, you better it, you know.
Yeah.
But you were talking about with the, you know, I used to say to myself, I would say, like, I don't want to talk about these things in the meetings because fear of being judged or whatever. And I say to myself, like, I don't think that I'm so unique that only I'm the one coming up with this stuff, you know.
Right.
It's like,
I know.
And usually when I share some stuff that I might not have normally, and I'm like, 1, 2, 3, go, just say it, you know. So many people come up to me afterwards, like, oh, they did that, or they've been through that, or thank you for sharing that, because I'm going through the same thing. And, you know, there's just a sense of healing in all of that. Yeah. You know, the unnervingness of sharing where you're at, and then seeing how people are going to react, and then folks coming up afterwards and relating, and maybe helping other people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Sometimes I'll be thinking, well, that was crazy. I should not have said any of that. And then someone comes up afterwards. It's like, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I would go through the same thing. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
You saved my life.
I've had people say, oh, I liked your share. And I was like, oh, what did I say? I don't know. I just open my mouth and this stuff comes out.
You're like, I'm going to dart out of this meeting now because.
Yeah. But what somebody told me one time, they were like, you know, that fear of being judged. And you're like, you want to know what all those other people think about you? They're not thinking about you at all. Because, you know, and I think they're going to think about me because I'm judgmental, you know. Yeah. So I'm judging everybody and their share, you know. And I think, well, I don't want them to judge me the way that, you know, because I'm harsh in judging them. Yeah. And the funny thing is it's, I don't really put a whole lot of thought into it. I'm like, I would never say that. Right. You know? But I'm focused on me. I don't give a nothing about them. It's not, I'm not judging them. I'm saying I wouldn't say what they're saying, you know, like that's the dialogue in my head. Like, I'm not really judging them. I don't care. I mean, 2 minutes, as soon as they're done sharing, I don't even think about them at all again.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you're still, it's all how it's relating
it's
to you.
It's all about me.
It's all about you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I think everybody's doing that same exact thing.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty true.
All right. So, I will say on the topic of sharing, which is, you know, sometimes I just don't want to share. You know, I feel like my ego is so much about being answer man, being Mr. Recovery, Mr. Reverend, that sometimes when I sit in the room, I just like, I don't need to contribute because all I'm doing is puffing my ego up, and I need some, it's hard to tell, right? For me personally, like I have to do it on a case by case. Like, and usually like, this might sound weird, but usually if I feel like what do you call it?
Guru?
I don't know,
like
you're bouncing.
Like a buzz in my spirit, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I'm feeling like if you're watching, I'm shaking, I'm moving. If I start feeling that, then I'm like, oh, I need to just say something. Because I can feel it in my body.
No. Right.
This needs to get out. But because I can sit in these, because I'm a communicator, right? So when I sit there, I can formulate some stuff. And if I'm thinking about what's going to make the room laugh, right? Or what's going to sound smart. That's usually when I just go, dude, I can't even say nothing.
There's nothing to say. Yeah.
There's nothing for me to say. Because all I'm doing is, you know, I'm just playing this game with myself. And that's not why I'm here. Right. You know, I'm here to expose my ego. I want my ego to be exposed in this room. I need to be humbled. Like every time we ever read out of the 12 and 12, the fourth step, in the 12 and 12, it's the 12 steps and 12 traditions.
Right.
And it's like a really in-depth breakdown of each step. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's great.
Anytime we ever go through the fourth step chapter, I mean, I have a God moment every time where I realize something deeply about myself. Every time. And I'm like, how the hell does this happen with this freaking literature?
Right. Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That's rewrote crazy. From the last time. You know, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they say the Bible is a living book or
know,
like divinely
inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, our fiance, she does a book study out of the 12 and 12. And, you know, when we read that, it's like, I've read this. Like, why is this so profound right now?
Why is
it
hit differently?
It's hitting hard right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, we have down in Miami, my sponsorship family has a workshop that we do every Tuesday. And I'm telling you, I'll drive 1 hour and 10 minutes both ways to go to this every Tuesday night because it's just like, I've never been with so many different people from all different walks that like I can go in there and everybody does. We all share where we're at. you know, openly. Yeah. And it's our special spot, and stuff that's said there is not, you know, said to anybody else. And like, people will come up and hug you afterwards and talk to you and check on, they check on you. Like, the whole sponsorship family is like that.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the safest spots that I've found in a long time, where the recovery is really happening there.
Yeah.
You know, people talk about all different subjects and they just let it go, because ultimately the pain that comes from sharing is going to heal. It's going to heal me. But if I don't share and I don't go to meetings and I don't do what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to have the same things happen. The prison, lose my daughter, divorce, all these things. And it could be even worse next time.
Yeah.
So why be afraid? You know, just afraid to keep it in, right? Yeah. You know, now it's like, if I'm going through something, I'm going to tell on myself. I'm just going to do it, because I don't want to experience that again.
Yeah.
Because my disease wants me to not tell people what's going on.
Well, because you've had a change, a psychic change. And because I think that misery and pain and suffering is addictive, you know? And we like it. We like feeling hurt and painful. And because I know anytime I'm feeling that, it gives me permission to do what I want to do.
Creating chaos for myself.
Yeah. And exactly. And so I get addicted to that portion of it. But then, you know, hopefully through the grace of God, I have this psychic change where I'm like, I go, oh, that actually doesn't sound fun anymore.
Right. Or I don't like how I feel when I do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This whole time it was cool, but now.
Now it's like it doesn't do the same thing. Right. You know, or it's like, you know, one of the questions here I'm going to ask is about sponsees and working with others. But I, you know, recently I've had a couple of sponsees have, you know, slip ups, meaning, which is great to their credit, you know, kind of like, one day kind of using or drinking and then immediately trying to reorient. Right. Which to me is hats off. Like, I give you credit for that. Right. Cause you could have started jumping on the train. You know, I think of it like a train, like you get on a train. And you can stay on the train as long as you want, right? Like, no one's stopping you from getting off the train. So if you get off in one stop, that's good, you know, because the train's eventually going to go off the tracks and burn and
explode
into a lake of fire. So get off the train, but you get to decide how quickly you get off the train, if, you know, in regards to like a relapse.
Right.
So it's good to see them kind of do that, but what I realize is it's not the same. They didn't get the relief that they had gotten previously,
right,
before recovery from the drugs and the alcohol. It just, now they're miserable. And it's like, part of me is like, good, but the other part of me too is feel like, God, that's hell, right? When the thing that used, the one thing that used to do it doesn't do it anymore, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now you're just like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to do what they say in the program.
Hopefully.
You know, if it doesn't grip you. I can't just use, you know, once. And I mean, I mean, it hasn't worked before.
Yeah.
You know, because I stay on that train until it crashes and burns. And and then I'm like, maybe I could stay on. Okay, it's not working anymore. Okay. And then the county always comes through and just, you know, never fails.
So back in 2012, I was about 4 months sober, and someone invited me to a drum and bass, some show at Masquerade. And I'd been to Masquerade in Ybor City, but I'd never been to Masquerade in Atlanta.
Okay.
You know, and I was like, well, that'll be cool. You know, I'm sober. It'll be fun, you know. And I have no spiritual experience. I have no sponsor. I'm just going to meetings.
Yeah.
And someone walks up and they try to hand me a tab of acid.
That's nice.
And you know, in my mind, I had not even gotten
this 2000,
over it.
Huh?
Like, I'm like, huh?
This 2012. 12.
Oh,
okay.
This is like, I moved into Atlanta from Woodstock. I moved up here in 2010 to Atlanta from Tampa.
Yeah.
And, after getting out of a 15-month program in lieu of going to prison for some stuff I did back then. And I thought I was good. I was cured. You know, I went through the program. I'm never going to use it again. 3 months out of being back up here, I relapsed or whatever, you know.
And you're only cured if you go to Passages, Malibu. Oh. Right.
Sorry. But this relapse, you know, and so the guy gives me one, and I'm like, well, I never really had a problem with acid, you know. And I really think that this is soul cleansing, you know. Like, this is only giving me a spiritual experience. It'll be all right, you know. Like, I'm just, you know. And then so about, as soon as it touched my tongue, it gave me about 5 minutes. And I finally go find the guy. And I'm like, I need about 6 more of those. And so, you know, to make it, make it worth it if I'm going to do it. You know? I'll just go get a white chimp in the morning. So, and I did, right? And then so fast forward, you know, I stay at the job. I stay in the halfway. No one knows about it. This little relapse thing, you know, except I don't think I told anybody. Maybe one of my roommates. And not 9 months go by of me going to meetings and going to work and going to meetings and not doing any step work or anything. And then I got laid off from the job. Mm. And I thought to myself, well, you know, and not to mention, you want to talk about crazy. So I'm in a halfway house and I'd been selling weed for about 6 months and thinking, you know, it's just weed, you know.
Right.
I'm sober. But
yeah.
And then, I'm not using, so it's okay. And then I saw my roommate selling meth, and I was like, wow, I need to get on that train, you know. Well, I'm sober, you know. I'm just going to sell a little bit better this time. Yeah. Supplement my income. You know?
Trapping out of the sober living.
Just being honest. This happened. Hopefully I don't get arrested.
That's going to be the name of my next album, is Trapping Out the Sober Living.
The Sober Living.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm good.
And so when I got laid off, I just got terminated. So I worked for a temp company. So all I had to do was go back to my company and get a new ticket. But, you know, this is the end of my, you know, if I can't work that ticket, I can't do nothing. You know, so it's all over, you know, this awfulizing, you know, the catastrophic thinking, you know. And so, you know, I had the meth. And I know my roommate was doing heroin, so I was like, mix these two.
One-stop shop.
This is going to be
like
great.
Like Walmart of drugs.
And I'll just go get a white chip tomorrow. Year and a half later, I'm in the Waffle House in the bathroom.
Oh, Lord, wow.
I really did think that I was going to make the decision to, you know, because then it just became, okay, well, I'll just finish up what I got here, and then maybe, you know, Saturday I'll go, you know.
Stack up your money.
You know, the next thing you know, it's Christmas, and it's like, yeah, I'll go back soon. It's only right. I'm still in the halfway house. It's only right down the street, you know. Like,
right.
Because this is more of a flop house than a halfway house.
Really?
No. I mean, you can get sober anywhere, you know, if you do this thing. But not if you're getting high.
right. Or if you're selling drugs out of your sober living. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's just see where we go. We'll switch a little bit here. So what is the greatest, speaking of like outside issues, what's the greatest challenge today that you're facing regarding your spiritual growth? I mean, what you're comfortable sharing on national television.
International television. You know, my it's consistent. I know that, you know, and I think that each time that I get through something that I haven't been able to overcome, I feel like spiritually I grow, you know, and that spiritual growth happens when I communicate with others. And even though my behavior might be a certain way, I know that it shouldn't be. I know that God's still working through me, you know, and when I make it through those situations, by talking to my network and praying and being aware of how I'm feeling during it. And now this doesn't always happen all at once, but like maybe once I get through it or when I have conversations with people, you know, I realize that my spirituality gets stronger when I make it through it. If I, you know, I don't take my own life or if I don't use, you know, I'm not going to do things perfectly, but I know that as long as I stay in constant communication with people, my spiritual growth will come out. It has come out after I've gotten through that situation.
Yeah.
You know, so and I've gone through some real whoppers these last 3 years, you know, just of, you know, old behaviors and different things and coping ways and, you know, moving and all these different things that have been going on. And, you know, I think that I'm so much stronger spiritually now than I've ever been. And it's only just because of just getting through the pain.
Yeah.
And
you persevered.
Persevered. Yeah. Yeah.
Or and persevered.
Is it persevered?
Or you persevered. Or you persevered.
Persevered. Whatever it is.
Or you it's pet the beard. You it's pet the beard.
Pet the beard.
You pet the beard through that.
I pet the beard through that and made it through.
Hey, we were at an event last night and the pastor goes, this is funny. The pastor goes, what's salvation mean? And this kid raises his hand. He goes, all right, what's salvation mean? He goes, when you're really hungry and you're about to take a bite of a sandwich.
Pet the beer.
Salvation. Beard. So, yeah. So that's like a spiritual principle at play is right. You staying the course, even though it's uncomfortable, even though you might not see the payoff, even though it's hard, but doing the things you know keep you like on the path.
Right.
Right. The righteous path. And just staying on it. And then when you kind of get through that, right? Or this kind of proverbial mountains and valleys kind of thing, right? Like, what's the C.S. Lewis says? If you're going through hell, keep going.
Keep going, yeah. Right? Like why would you want to stop if you're going through the fire?
Right.
If you're going through the fire, why would you want to stop?
And that's what's happening with you is you're proving to yourself by persevering.
Petting the beard.
But petting the beard through it, you're proving to yourself that you can do hard things.
Right. And then you get through that. And I think that, you know, the biggest part was, I think the spiritual growth was able to happen because of the foundation that I set in early recovery.
Amen.
You know, if I wouldn't have set that, you know, early on, the troubles today would have been a lot harder.
Yeah.
You know, because I the tools were practiced over and over again, going to meetings, sharing, not forgetting the pain that I've been through, still experiencing the effects of my past pain and today and staying clean through it and so much more. Just like, and once I passed through something that I was struggling with or whatever was going on, some milestones that I'm clearing, you know, the reward from those has been, I mean, like through the pain, the reward from the pain that I'm passing through has been so insane. And like, I feel like the growth spiritually from that is like, oh wow, okay, this does work.
Yeah.
So then I know that the next time I'm training my brain and my spirit, whatever you want to call it, like I know that the next time I go through something that's hard, there'll be a spiritual growth through that, and I will get through it, and there'll be a reward.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, I think you hit on something very important there, and then we'll get back to that question, but it's that establishing a firm foundation, because I feel like I've said that a lot to people, which is that first year of recovery, I think, you know, again, I feel like it was a grace, right? Like I was given a grace to do the thing, but I do feel like that first year of having a very strict, you know, meeting schedule, a very strict, like, spiritual schedule. I went to work. I came home, was with my family. I went to a meeting, like, 6 days a week. You know, I did church, and I did volunteer, and I did all this stuff, and that was, like, non-negotiables for that first year.
Right.
I think it really did give me this foundation that I didn't even know I was building.
Right.
You know, I was just doing the thing, and yeah, because I've been through a ton of shit in the last 12 years, right? And it could have gone a lot of ways, but I think that, and I always try to encourage people who are early in recovery, like, just, it's simple, right? Just do the thing. Everyone says it, right? We all know what the things are, right?
Right.
Like, show up, be of service, make the coffee, like, just be around everybody. Like, don't break commitments. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Like, it's not difficult, but it really lays a foundation.
It does. And the service for me has been a lifesaver.
Yeah.
You know, through that, just seeing, you know, how God has been working through me and, you know, is really some nights where I wanted to throw in the towel, even with all the tools that I use, everything I've been taught, you know, and helping somebody else out has got me out of some real messy situations,
yeah.
You know, or things that I thought was overwhelming enough where my brain was telling me that that's only using is the only way to deal with this.
Yeah.
And then someone calls up and wants help. And you're like,
right at the right time.
Right. Right. When you're on that road, when you're like, well, I know how to get people into programs.
Yeah.
Just smoke a little crack and figure it out. You know, then they're like, bring, bring. Hey, I'm dying. I need your help. You know, you're like, okay. Then you get into, you know, helping another
person. Get out of yourself.
You get out of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that I think could be a spiritual experience as well.
Yeah. So, Will, for you, is there a specific spiritual growth challenge that you're experiencing now? I think at 9 years, I think it's interesting to hear kind of what that experience is like.
Today I was presented with something. So I'm a contractor, and so I have people that work for me. And the one guy was saying something about being a good friend, or and they sent me something, and he was joking, you know, because so there's a character, I guess, I play a role on the job, you know, and that requires that the guys respect what I say and they do what I ask, you know, because I'm leading the show, and sometimes I'm not so spiritually fit and I say things, and it's funny because it'll come out in a way that, you know, I don't really worry about their, how they feel, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as when in earlier sobriety where I tighten my, you know, I say the things that need to be said, and maybe I'm not very sensitive to their feelings, you know,
right.
Some people are in recovery and some people aren't, but, you know, being a friend and being kind, you know, my uncle taught me my trade, and he was so gentle. And so, you know, I aspire to be more like him.
You know?
He was very calm. Of course he was like in his 60s. When I started working for him.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah.
I think, you know, I'm 45. You know, I'm feeling pretty good, you know, physically. And sometimes I guess getting a little hyped.
Yeah.
But you still got
the fire in you and the fight, and still, yeah.
But I don't feel the internal, you know,
yeah.
Like, when I would used to, I'd have emotional hangover from some of these things, you know, where I'd yell at somebody, and so it's just something that I need to inventory and look at, you know, and be aware of, you know, that I could say it more kindly, you know, and then when I do, I go a little too gentle. And I don't get what I want, and then it's a problem. You know,
and you start breaking things.
Finding that middle road it is a challenge for me. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's so funny because I'm editing a series right now, and that's what the guy says in the series. He's trying to get these guys who are working on a bunker in Montana, and the guy's like, I try to tell him nice. I got a real raspy voice. I try to tell him real nice, you know, to get going, and they don't listen. I got to get a cattle prod and shock these motherfuckers into. Like, whoa.
Then they'll learn.
Then they listen. Then they start working.
You get the response, and it's like, why would I stop doing what works?
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly. Right. I
don't, you don't like this behavior? Stop rewarding it.
Right.
Right.
You keep showing up and letting me abuse you. And
right.
You have to say, I love you afterwards.
But I'm responsible.
I love you, but.
I love you, however.
However. Yeah. Well, one of the questions I had here is, how crazy are you still? I think we've covered that pretty well this last 45 minutes.
Not enough to collect a check. No. Sorry.
Not enough to cash a check.
To collect a check.
Uh-huh. I like this question. I think this is a very very important but unemphasized part of recovery.
Okay.
What daily disciplines do you implement to stay grounded?
I think that the biggest thing for me is, trying to always have like a, you know, and I'm not really 100% with it, but, you know, the one thing I can say is consistent is my communication. And sometimes, I mean, I know 1000% that that's been my lifesaver, you know, just trying to have, not try, but doing a regular routine, you know, I'm still getting there.
Yeah.
That's just my main thing to stay grounded is the people that are around me.
Yeah.
You know, and my prayer and, you know, just showing up, you know, those things, sometimes if that's just all that I have, then it saved me. You know, there's been a lot of major things that have gone on this last year. So it's been a lot of like finding myself, surviving, you know, because
a lot of changes and shifts,
in myself. And so that's, you know, the service and the communication has been really what has been consistent for me because that's just what I needed, you know, and sponsor, you know, services, sponsoring others, you know, getting back into that and being there for them, you know, which and just changing things up. You know, I had to, when I saw that what I had in my area wasn't working for me, I switched it to another area and it's been a whole game changer, you know. Yeah. So,
that's an honest answer, and I'm glad that, you know, you didn't lie to us and tell us that you were like sitting on your head every day.
Oh yeah, I do upside down push-ups. No.
Will, what about you? Do you have a daily practice or discipline that you?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that is still, I'll be honest. 2 days ago, wasn't today. I left the house without praying. Mm. And it's morphed over the years. You know, I used to go when I was in halfway this time, I was in walking distance of 8111. I don't know if you know that clubhouse, but I got a job at a pizza restaurant, make a minimum wage. I'd work 4 hours from 11 to like 4. I'd go to the 5:45. I'd stay for the 8, and then I'd stay for the 10. And my curfew was 12 o'clock, so I'd walk back to my, and I did that every day for like the first year. And prayed on my knees in the morning.
Talk about laying a foundation right there.
Right.
Fear is what drove me because I didn't want to use, and I didn't know the area, and I was afraid that if I did something else, I was going to get high and then I was going to be homeless again. Yeah. You know, and I didn't want that. You know, like, and so, my first 3 years were pretty grueling. There were some highlights where I enjoyed, but I didn't have a license for the first 3 years. So I did a lot of walking, a lot of MARTA, you know, shit jobs, but it was worth it, you know?
Yeah.
Even up to COVID, I was going, you know, because when the 8111 shut down, but I had to find a meeting, you know. And so me and one of my sponsees, we were going to live meetings, you know. I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah. Secretly meeting in parks and behind bushes.
Right,
just
whatever, you know. Right. Like, I'm going to find a meeting or I'm going to make my own, you know. Yeah. And then, I don't know, somewhere, I probably at least go to 3 meetings a week. I pray every morning. I mean, and when I realized that I had forgotten, I just prayed in the car, which I've never done because I usually do it on my knees. But, you know, I guess, you know, these things can slip away, you know, like she was talking about, you know, having had sobriety and you just, you know, I don't need to go to this or I don't need to.
Yeah.
And that's pretty scary, you know, like I guess the farther away from a drink, the closer you could be, you know, right. if you don't take your medicine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's also, too, if that's the challenge when you're only relating to it as what you can get out of it, right?
Right.
But when you're relating to it in the way that you guys have described it, right, which is what you're putting into it also, right, then it's a different thing. Because if you're only showing up for what am I getting out of this
right.
meeting or this fellowship or this relationship, then it gets really boring.
You know, that's the thing is like with my sponsor that I have now, the other thing I was reminded that keeps me grounded is, you know, she said to me the first thing was every day you do a grateful list. We have like a group chat with all of us that we say five things we're grateful for every day. You know, we read the Living the Program pamphlet at night, and she says, always make your bed. Good morning. You know, it's the first right thing you can do.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's some daily disciplines that you've implemented.
Yeah.
That was one I learned.
My brain just forgets.
Yeah. That's one I learned in jail.
Like, oh, that's right.
So if you would, when I...
Thank you.
I spent about 4 years of my life in county jail in multiple different times.
Yeah.
Right.
But when... And I would always be a trustee because they knew me. They're like, oh, I'm going to get you on my... You know, you're going to come work. You know, mm-hmm. if I'd see an officer... Because I'd been there so many times. But anyway, if you would go to work and you come home and your bed wasn't made, it'd throw it on the floor.
Ooh.
And so when y'all said, you know, make your bed, I'm like, all right, make my bed. You know, like the reward to that is you get to come home and it's a nice, cool spot.
Your bed's not thrown on the ground.
I mean, there's no better feeling than pulling back that sheet and being like, oh, that feels good.
Yes, yeah, right.
Nice and crisp.
Yeah.
Well, you have some memories attached to not making your bed, so you're like...
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. And that floor is nasty.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, 99 guys in a tent, like a giant...
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah.
Sounds hairy. Sounds
skin.
Like a weird show. Yeah. 99 guys in one tent.
Yeah. Naked and afraid. 99 guys naked
you're
and
like,
afraid.
We must make our bed.
They had cameras in the showers. I don't know.
Oh.
One guy escaped, I guess. Oh.
Oh, through the shower. They're like, yeah, not today.
Actually, he went out.
You're like, can we just get
this
one
guy
moment
escaped.
Of peace?
He worked in the kitchen. He took the lid off of a can, folded it up, put it in his boot, brought it back. That morning, I woke up at 4 a.m. I'm shaving, and I see something like. Somebody, like, he's, like, peeking around this wall. You know, there's, like, this little knee wall. And it was like Gollum, you know, like, my precious. And I was like, because people would hide stuff in the walls. Like, these were, not Afghanistan, Iraq. When they were in the military, they had those big military tents.
Oh, yeah.
So they bought some of these and they put them, you know, to put the trustees in, you know, at this jail. And so that's where we lived. And this
so
they
called them trustees, not inmates.
Yeah, trustee, it would say on. Yeah, not. I mean, we were inmates. And they did get new ones that said inmate, too.
Okay.
You know, so, but at that time, it was trustee. That was like...
Like, hey, Will. The guard called.
I don't know which time that is. Yeah, he got out. And then it was like a quarter mile to the road. But they found him 4 days later. He was dressed like a woman. And he ran, when the cop drove by, he ran to his mom's house. And the cop wasn't even chasing him. He turned around and came back, and the guy was in there smoking crack. And he jumped out the window into the cop's arms. And then
my job, I
took every job that I could, because the more time you work, the more time you get off your sentence. So I was like working up in J-Wing, which is the crazy wing, and they had him up there. Naked and afraid. They had beaten him quite severely. It was.
Then they're like, because of you, we have cameras in the shower, you piece of.
No, they always had cameras in the shower.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was because of the guy. I'm like, I would beat him up.
I don't know why they had cameras in the shower. I thought that was very disturbing, but.
Yeah, there's some reality show in Russia that's like trustees.
Right.
You know, trustees directed by who's the guy that does Law and Order? Gong Gong.
I tried to make it fun for myself. Yeah, like I'm a star.
They're making money. They think it's just regular surveillance cameras, but it's like not. Russia watching the
they're
inmates.
Like making bets on who's gonna make
yeah,
it.
I'm
or
sure
not.
They did get money that way. Yeah, let's see why not.
Well, this has been, I think, an actually very informative,
very,
very insightful time together.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I mean, I think, you know, compared to therapy, shit, we kicked it.
Yeah.
We knocked it out the park. You know
what
I'm saying?
I feel pretty grounded. And
yeah. So we'll each take 150 per at the end of this episode. Thank you for listening.
We're gonna go pet a beard afterwards.
We're petting beards. We're gonna pet a beard through this. Any parting words? So what I would love for Will for you to look into your camera, which is right directly in front of you, the one below, lower, and just
there.
Anything you would say to somebody who's like you and who's struggling and but they haven't made this decision. What would you tell them?
I think it's the best decision I've ever made. You know, what do you got to lose if you're out there doing something you don't want to do? What do you have to lose? Give this a shot, you know? There's not a whole lot of instant gratification. It's going to be probably a delayed thing. I mean, unless you get a, what do they call that? Pink cloud. I didn't experience that, but it'll probably be short-lived. I don't know. I don't know what it'll be for you, but I would say give it a shot, you know? I mean, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Know? Or you end up in a Waffle House with SWAT around you, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. That's not... Yeah, you could... Yeah, you probably won't get that far, but
yeah,
just quit now.
Just quit now.
All right, Miro, what about you? You're
no. So, words of wisdom for those that are struggling.
Yeah.
Well, I always say to people though that, you know, if you don't want to be someone that loses your kid, like I did, if you don't want to, if you don't like prison or jail, and the embarrassment that comes from that, if you are continuing to miss out on moments that, you know, would be important to you, you know, it's years go by and it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing every single time. And the only thing that can change that and settling for that lifestyle is just going to end you back up into jail or death or... You know, nothing good comes from it. And, you know, if you're someone that's struggling, that's been in and out, it's, you know, I get it. That was me, you know, and I felt like I could do things the way that I wanted to and just play with it, do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that, and not follow the program like I am now. And I had to pay for that, you know, and I'm not willing to pay anymore. And when I came in and I did what I needed to do, life has been 10,000 times better than whatever I ever expected, and it's just getting started, you know. So there's no love out there in that lifestyle.
Amen.
No love.
Can I read something real
quick? Absolutely.
Someone just sent me this, and since I really didn't have much wisdom, this is a book that apparently... Buddha is quoting here. This is Buddhist stuff. So if you can't find the truth right where you are, where else do you think you will find it?
Ooh, that was
nice.
Good.
I thought that was a good one.
I wish I had nice words like that. I was told I have a big head and shiny forehead by Jake. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it.
That's good. I like that.
That.
If you can't find it.
Yeah. It's like, where are your feet? You know, like what they like we ask.
Yeah. Or the, if you want to know the meaning of life, do the dishes.
Ooh.
Because if you can't find the meaning of life doing the dishes, you'll never find it. Yeah.
That's a t-shirt. If I ever saw one.
I actually had that. I was, I was at the beach, which is my Zen place, my favorite place. And I had this thought, and I realized that that's like been a key for me, is getting comfortable being bored.
Right.
Like getting comfortable in the mundane. There's so much of my addiction life was about the chaos.
Right.
And creating chaos. And to get to a place where it's like, okay, I'm still not completely okay. I'm well aware when I'm bored, right? Like all the flags are going off, the alarms are blaring, like we need stimulation. And so if I can learn, the more I learn just to be bored, be in that, then I think there is something that really happens, you know?
I think it's a gentle reminder of like, it's okay to be just still.
Yeah.
And not have to always, you know, create something going on, you know, and just remembering where the chaos was before and just saying, you know, okay, it's okay if we're not going out, you know, after 8 or, you know, it's okay to be just chilling right now, you know.
Yeah.
It's more predictable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds.
So, yeah, I think that peace is foreign for, I honestly thought when they said in meetings, peace of mind, I thought it was one of those lines, like, you know, let go and let God. Like, right. It was a piece of something a piece of this, of mind.
Yeah.
You know, some thought that you were going to give me. And I didn't understand the word peace. Like, and experiencing peace for someone that loves chaos is very foreign, and but I think also that's what I wanted when, you know, I'm that sense of ease and comfort comes with the first drink, or
yeah,
you know, I like heroin, so it's like even faster, you know, and you know, that's peace, you know, for just a moment.
Yeah,
I get to, and to find that, you know, without any substance is kind of difficult, you know, with a mind that is trying to solve problems and trying to find excitement. And when, like you said, you know, I see a lot of young people come in and they want to do fun stuff all the time. Fun stuff, you know? And everything is like a pendulum, you know? Yeah. You know, and you get cocaine, you go way up, you go way down.
Yeah.
And finding that medium, you know, like you were saying, is, you know, just staying in the mundane and being okay with it, you know, you probably find peace there. So, yeah.
It's like peace and consistency, you know?
Yeah.
And just accepting that, you know, just like, okay, well, even though chaos was fun, it still always ended with something crazy, you know? Yeah. It was just, now it's, you know, you can have, the chaos is not, it doesn't have to be doesn't have to be ending with prison or jail or whatever, you know, it might, you can still have some predictable chaos, but nothing, you know, like, you know, turn it up a little bit, but nothing permanent.
Yeah.
Makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you guys talking and I really appreciate you guys' insight and sharing openly. And this has been the episode of The Most High Show. If you're struggling and you need help and you've listened to this point, and then reach out. contact@themosthighshow.com. That's an email address. You can email us, and we will try to connect you with some resources that will get you out of wherever you are and into a place where you can get some help. If you just want to reach out and you need someone to talk to, hit us up there too. All right. This has been The Most High Show. Peace.